Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Is the quote, conventional relationship ideal, actually killing steamy sex with your partner? Can exploring a variety of options be the greatest aphrodisiac? And how does staying true to yourself translate to a more passionate sex life? This week, we're in the studio with Dr. Sean Dorgardos, a clinical psychologist and sex therapist, talking about what you can do to have better sex. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Sean Dorgardos to the discussion. He's a clinical psychologist and sex therapist. He's written well over 100 articles, chapters, and books, and other publications, and he's the founder of MyPleasure.com. Shondor is also a regular guest on many nationally syndicated television and radio shows, and I'm really psyched to have you here on the show today, Shondor. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
You've done way more than what I was talking about. You've been in like major magazines. You write for Cosmo and that kind of thing. Is that true?
Yeah. Most I've been in most major women's and men's magazines.
Okay, and do you write differently for one than the other, or is it pretty much straight down the middle?
Well, I don't actually write for them. I get featured in them, so
okay.
other people write, and they interview me and things like that. I think as a group, the women's magazines are actually perpetuating far more misinformation than the men's magazines are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you pick up a copy of Cosmo versus Men's Fitness or Men's Health, I think there's actually more healthy information being presented in the men's magazines, oddly enough.
And that kind of flies against the face of what used to be that men were propagating kind of unhealthy images or myths around women. Is that
yeah,
right?
I mean, if you were an alien and trying to get a sense of what men and women are like in on Earth, and you read Cosmo, I mean, you get a really bizarre view of what women are in. I mean, you'd think that basically women, the only thing they care about is their thighs and how to seduce their man and make them commit. You know,
is that the path to commitment? Seduction
and then commitment, yes. And if you read men's magazines, you'd think that we had nothing better to do than worry about our love handles.
There it is. Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was kind of, I want to challenge this conventional wisdom, quote unquote wisdom, around desire, passion, and relationships. And you and I have discussed this privately before, but I want to kind of speak to that. What is the conventional relationship killing passion and sex?
I think absolutely. And there's been a fair amount of research on this coming out in the last 5 to 10 years, that many of the things that we in this society have come to really value in relationships, feelings of safety and companionship and openness, these are wonderful things to strive for. Unfortunately, they tend to kill passion. Passion comes from overcoming obstacles, from some of the things that we consider to be more negative, quote-unquote negative emotions, and maybe even shadow stuff. where basically a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of anger, a little bit of fear, a little tiny smidgen of jealousy thrown in. This is what spices up relationships. This is what makes things truly hot and passionate. When you're being totally equal and totally the same, and honey, I hear that what you're saying is this, and here's how I feel, and here's how, let's work out a nice middle of the road compromise, that does not lead to hot sex.
Got it. So it's this tension that gets built up, but it's also, is there a way, I'm trying to, like, because I imagine I've been in some really, I like the word spicy, relationships, but it was also pretty painful, too, yeah. without some kind of ability to communicate clearly. Is there a middle road here, or is it just going to be like, no, it's got to be dirty?
I'd like to think there is a middle road, and I think it's one that you find by constantly making course corrections.
Say more about that.
I think the way you find what's comfortable is by overshooting, and you go a little maybe too spicy, and it was hot, but now you're feeling, you know, you've gotten too high up on the anxiety level, and so then you backtrack a bit, and now it's all calm and beautiful, and you feel really connected, and oops, I haven't felt like having sex with her in 2 weeks, you know, maybe it's time to introduce a little more play, and maybe I just need to grab her and spank her, and, you know, something like that.
Got it, and so let's kind of go down one by one of some of the these myths of what a healthy, modern, conventional relationship are. What's the first one? I heard you kind of talking about the way we talk to one another in a relationship. Is that the big one?
Yeah, I think that's one of them. I think, you know, right now nonviolent communication is all the rage. And I, you know, basically where you say, you know, you basically acknowledge the other person and you say how you feel when you hear them say it and you reflect it and then you work out a nice equal little compromise and you make a request and the other person acknowledges you back. And I mean, it's great for negotiation. And I would certainly, you know, I'm very much in support of it when you're dealing with conflict in the business world or with friendships. But that doesn't lead to spontaneous, hot, passionate relationships and sex. I think it's something you drop into when necessary in a relationship, when things have gotten too heated.
So it's like instead of it being the way that things are, the way of being in a relationship, it's just a tool to bring out from time to time. But if it becomes the standard, it's going to kill. It's going to kill the fire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the other ones that I think is very much connected with this is I think we have come to, as a society, as we try to get past sexist notions and inequality, we've come to this notion of the best relationships are ones that where the man and the woman, and we're talking about heterosexual couples here, but we could be talking about other situations, where the man and the woman are the same. I think there's a big difference between equal and being the same. And I think very much that when it's very hard to build that tension, to build what's sometimes called polarity, when both of you are equally involved in everything and both of you are striving to have 50% in everything you do, the way you do it, like, honey, last time I picked, you know, what we have for dinner, this time you pick what we have for dinner, and, you know, trying to maintain this almost this mental scorecard. I mean, it's very fair, but it's not very exciting, and I think both people wind up being disappointed by it. And what winds up happening is, you know, what I see a lot of couples doing is the man maybe really feels like having Italian, and the woman's like, no, you know, I really feel like having Chinese, and he doesn't want to have Chinese, so they wind up having Thai, and then neither one is satisfied. you know, I think you're much better off just, you know what, tonight, I'm picking it tonight.
Yeah.
And we'll pick yours some other time.
Help me understand how we find ourselves in this more hotter dynamic where it's still... I guess I'm looking for the word. I guess it's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the ways we get there is by, as men, is learning to tolerate discomfort. I think as men, we've sometimes been burned so much in relationships, and we find women's emotions to be so overwhelming that we're just trying to keep the peace.
Yeah, it's almost like I don't even want to deal with it, so I'll just stuff it. I'll go eat Chinese, even though I want Italian. And right. I don't want to fucking deal with her.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And oh my God, you know, if I do this, she might get triggered, and then we got a big emotional thing, and I don't want to deal with her emotions. And so I think the first step is getting comfortable living in a slightly messier world mm-hmm. in your relationships, of knowing that if you're going to play at this high level, there's going to be some stuff released. You may suddenly find stuff coming up. She may burst into tears, and not feeling like, oh my God, something's terribly wrong because strong emotions came up. It could be, but maybe if something is very right.
Uh-huh. So it could be, say more about that. What do you mean? It could be something that's very right.
Because you are now moving past that half-dead state where everything's placid, but it doesn't feel very alive.
Uh-huh.
When you both are feeling alive and you're really challenging each other and helping each other grow, then sometimes you're going to hit some territory where anger is going to come up, fears are going to come up, maybe even early childhood stuff is going to come up. And that's, you know, potentially a good sign that this is a relationship where you're challenging each other and pushing each other, and that's going to lead to some real strong passion as well.
I like it. It also seems like to get into this high level game, that you've really got to be secure with yourself. That okay, if she flips out, it's not the end of the relationship. It's
right.
not going to be the end of all of this. I'm willing to take a stand, and I'm willing to let it get messy and. Because I know that ultimately things are going to be okay. Is that right?
Or actually, I think you can go even at a higher level. That would be, and maybe they won't be okay, and I'll be okay anyway.
Wow.
To really be, you know, where I'm going to, I think we often measure the success of a relationship by how long it lasts, as opposed to how much am I in my truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a higher level of evaluating what's going right and what's going wrong.
So the big piece here is how much are we in our own integrity? How in touch are we with our own values? And I'm in touch with that on the inside, so therefore my actions and words and things that I'm doing on the outside are in alignment with that.
Absolutely.
And I got to be willing, and I've got to be willing to put up with her shit to stay in alignment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully her shit is going to help clarify when you're falling out of alignment.
How could that be? Because it could be like, well, I'm doing my thing, and the more I do my thing, the more it upsets her. So how could it be? How could it be the other way?
So I think this is the big risk with this sort of approach. Is I think it's very easy to actually be in a total narcissistic place and think you're actually playing at a high level.
Right.
The two often look the same from the outside.
Uh-huh.
When you're saying, you know, this is my truth and this, and I mean my integrity, and you know I'm okay with the with dealing with the consequences, that can come across as you being very that can come from a very narcissistic place,
mm-hmm.
or it can come from a very transcendent place, and that's where paying really close attention to what's going on inside you, and where paying attention, keeping your heart open, and seeing what's going on with your partner, and seeing where am I. Because I think women in particular are very finely attuned to when men are falling out of their integrity.
Yeah, as I think about it, on one hand, I can be the dick. Like, it's my way or the highway, and you just put up with it or not. And I'm also feeling like when I'm in that position, I'm not accessible. I'm not really reachable. I'm not really in relationship.
Exactly. And I think, that's where I said you keep in touch with what's going on in your internal process. Are you actually doing this from a place of openness, or is it from a place of contraction? You know, are you doing this as a way to protect yourself? Are you saying, well, it's my way or the highway, because you basically are posturing and you just you don't want to deal with it? Or is it really like coming from a strong, solid place? And that can be hard to know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of we're pretty familiar with the Authentic Man program. That'd be one place to learn how to do this. Where else can a guy get that check-in? It seems like he's going to need to get feedback from others on whether or not he's just coming from that posturing place.
Or collapse, or 100 other variations that men do.
Yeah.
I think you and I probably, we've talked about this in other venues, I think having a strong community of men is a great way to get that.
Great.
Whether you belong to a men's circle or just some really solid male friendships who are willing to call you on your shit.
Yeah.
who are willing to support you, but say, you know, really, but tell you what they feel is really authentically going on in the moment there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that sounds kind of like you're standing up for your rights, but you're really just being a narcissistic dick.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, or they can say something like, and so are you? Is there any compassion here for her?
Yeah.
Because if it's not, maybe you shouldn't be in this relationship, or maybe you need some therapy.
Right. Right. Well, let's go. Let's take it a step down further. So, I want to learn more about why the safety part, or why safety, or that security stuff actually kills the passion. Can you speak more to that?
Sure. There's a couple of reasons that happens. I think a lot of this comes from the fact that in the last, it depends what culture you're in, 50 to 100 years, we are expecting our primary partners to fulfill the roles that were often taken by other people that might have been served by our community, our friends, our family. What I see now is men are expecting their intimate partners to be the sexy goddess, to also be their mother, to also be their best friend, to be their business partner, to be their confidant, to be their community, to be their church. That's an awful lot to put on one person.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the person who is your confessor, taking your confession, may not be the person you want to fuck.
Uh-huh.
Or as a famous sexologist from the 50s, John Money, once said, basically, you just don't want to fuck the person you see take out the garbage every morning.
I love that. Yeah, it makes me think. I was reading a quote by Steve Jobs, and he said something to the effect, like, focus means saying no. Like, it's just like, you got to eliminate some of those things. So how does someone in our modern culture eliminate, is the idea to eliminate some of those roles or reduce the expectations? What does that look like?
I think partially men need to stop looking for their intimate partner to fulfill the role that might be better served by a men's circle, or might be better served by a close male friend or their family. Or, I think there's nothing wrong with desiring those things, but you can't have it all in one person.
Mm. Otherwise, you get that kind of, I just imagine it being kind of a casserole. Like, it's just kind of all in one thing.
It's all going to be kind of diluted then.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the research is so clear on this, that variety is the greatest aphrodisiac.
Mm-hmm. What kind of variety? What are you talking about?
So variety can take many forms. I think if you really distill it down, is when you think you know everything about your partner, when you no longer are seeing them fully, when you're no longer willing to be surprised by them, passion is going to be over. And this is why I think the ideal that some people have about how they want to have complete and utter openness in their relationship can actually backfire. I'm not talking about withholding stuff that would be critical for your partner. No, I'm not talking about lying.
Right.
But there's a level of differentiation that has to exist for there to be the sexual tension.
Mm-hmm.
So these couples that say we share everything, we have no secrets, we read each other's emails, things like that, I don't think that's a good idea if you're wanting to maintain a hot, passionate relationship.
Because somehow it just kind of like, well, I know this person. I know what he's doing. There's just like no spark. Where's the curiosity? Where's the mystery?
Right. At that point, you're essentially masturbating when you have sex together.
Oh, no.
That's true. Marriage therapists have been talking about this for longer than sex therapists have, about the importance of differentiation. For a healthy relationship, you each need your own interests, your own friends. And there's a big difference between secrecy and privacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine to have certain areas that are really yours. You're not hiding them, but they're kind of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you a more interesting partner.
Yeah.
That's when you can create new experiences for your partner. If they already know every last detail about you and your life and everything you've done, then you're not going to have a lot of variety, because you're not going to surprise them ever.
Yeah, and as a guy, I'm just imagining, like, when I go out or, you know, and I'm in a bar and there's a woman across the way, it's like, I want to explore her. You know, there's this thing of wanting to discover who she is or what, you know, what's going on with this person. I can imagine kind of having it all laid out, knowing her debt, knowing this and that. It's just kind of like, well, all right, maybe there's like a less of an attraction there. So keeping something behind the curtain has me wanting to explore this person even more.
To dive in, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what are some of the other things? There's the differentiation piece. There's the telling everything. What else is killing the passion? What are the other conventional things that are killing the passion in our relationships?
You know, I think we talked already about this feeling that you have to, that compromise means that you each have to, at every given moment, be equal and the same, that instead of maybe taking turns, you know, and that applies in sex too. That, I mean, it's rare that one of your sexual fantasies is going to be exactly and complementary to her biggest sexual fantasy. So if you guys both try to compromise every encounter where you're each getting exactly the equal amounts, you can get equal amounts, you're just going to get a very low amount.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with an indulgent sexual fantasy. Like, you know what, honey, tonight I just want to blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then next week she can say, you know, tonight I am really in the mood for you to whatever. And it'll come out in the wash if it's a healthy relationship.
Yeah. And what I'm getting from that is that as a partner, I'm willing to indulge my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it may not be the big thing for me, but you know what? It turns her on. I'm going to do it. And hopefully
if this is a good relationship and you're solid in your own sexuality and sense of self, it's going to turn you on that she's getting so turned on.
Yeah, I can imagine that for sure. Okay. Cool. But the idea that if it doesn't turn you on, then we don't do it. That's what you're kind of answering to. Well, then it's off the menu because it doesn't turn you on.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And I think, unfortunately, because of this, I think men are so worried about offending women. And I mean, if men knew what women fantasize about for real, oh my God. I mean, women's fantasies are so much more explicit and detailed and raunchy than any man's fantasy.
And so, yeah, this kind of gets to a point of like, does a guy even know what turns him on? Like, it seems like it might be like he lacks imagination in the bedroom. Is that a true assumption?
Yeah. And it's a big complaint that, you know, I hear women talking about, that there's no creativity, there's no spontaneity, there's no humor, there's no none of that. And it's fascinating when I've seen thousands of patients, and when I talk to women about what are your main turn-ons, what's your deepest, darkest fantasy, I mean, women come up with amazingly detailed stories. and it's got to be just right sometimes, too. Like, the dog has to be a Dalmatian, you know, things like that. And you ask guys, I mean, not, I'm generalizing here, right? But you ask guys what turns you on, what's your greatest fantasy, what was your most peak experience of your life, and they're like, I like women. Like, okay. Is there something in particular? I like tits.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll do like a guided meditation, you know, go back to that time when you've never felt so alive and you were just, this was like the greatest sexual moment in your life, and, you know, really guide them into that and then have them talk about it. And they're like, we were having sex. What were you doing? You know, my dick was inside of her and I was going in and out. It's like... And what made that peak? What made that the peak experience of your life? Well, she was hot. Was there anything that made her hot? She had nice tits. It's like, you know, you just don't, women, you know, they can tell you, you know, what was so hot about the experience and what made it great and the whole story and narrative around it. And it's amazing. I don't think most guys are even really deeply in touch with their own desire.
Seems like there's way more potential or capacity. Well, I don't know if the capacity, they were debating if the capacity for a man to have that is there, but there seems like there's more potential for enjoyment and pleasure for men, and guys aren't tapping into that. Why is that? All the blood's in our penis, or
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think a lot of it, at least with, I think there's different reasons, and but I think for a lot of men nowadays, it's from internalized shame. That I think we as men have been taught that our desire is bad. And admittedly, men and women are both taught that, generalized, right? Mm-hmm. Our first message around sexuality are often negative. It is almost unheard of for a person to say the first time they were caught masturbating was a beautiful experience, you know? and their mom said, oh, that's, I'm so glad you found out about your, you know, you discovered that. Doesn't that feel wonderful? I do that all the time, too. I'm sorry for interrupting. You keep going. That's beautiful. That's just not what happens, you know?
Right.
So, as a society, I mean, we have so much sex negativity. I mean, we use sex to sell everything, but actually talking about healthy sexuality is still a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
We're still pushing abstinence-only education programs. That's what the government funds.
Mm-hmm.
That basically sex is dirty and wrong. Save it for someone you love, you
mm-hmm.
know? And so there's a lot of sex negativity throughout. Then men get something else piled on top of that, which is our sexuality is dangerous. Our sexuality freaks out women.
Mm-hmm.
And that we need to keep that in check.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to play essentially to the lowest common denominator. That most men have had the experience of just a mild display of their own sexuality, and some women, for whatever personal reasons, freaks out. Maybe she has a history of trauma, maybe you miscalculate a little bit, whatever, and you're like, oh my God, I can't even let out even a little drop.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of repression, and as we repress, we get out of touch with ourselves. And men cut off from their own sense of sexuality.
Tune in next week as we continue our discussion with Dr. Shondor Gardos about how a man's sexuality is getting a bad rap. Thanks for listening.